So about a week ago, a number of us went out to the River Street campground to make sure that the visitors policy promised by Captain Laubach was in force. And indeed it was. If you're on a list, you could get in, or at least we could. We were told by Laubach on audio tape and on video that we could come at any time of the day or night. But he later informed Eric, the director, that he had never said that, which he apparently had forgotten or was simply wrong in representing that he hadn't said that, because I played it on the air and he did. But in any case, the policy seems to be between 10 and 3:30 or something. And the director, Eric, said that it's mostly a matter of staff, that he wants, that's really the issue. It's not that he wants to keep people out, but he wants to kind of make sure it can, people can be monitored. I'm not going to justify that. But in any case, we went in there, and one woman outside wanted to talk to me. She was on the other side of the barbed wire. She, I don't know, she tried to get in, and they wouldn't let her, or she didn't try to get in, or whatever. But I went outside, and we chatted, and we had this conversation.
Oh, it's around 12:20. We're talking with
L.A.
And L.A., you say that you had a chance to come into the River Street camp. You decided against it. Why was that?
I'm going to give it to somebody who needs it more.
And you have a place you're sleeping?
Yes. I've been there for 4 years, and I've been keeping it up and doing what I'm supposed to do, keeping it clean, respecting the earth. So I'm comfortable. My issue today is the house right across the street from us.
Say that again.
The house, the blue and white house right there. It's been boarded up for 12 years, 1217 River.
Yeah.
I want to know why it's boarded up and how come we can't open it as a resource and refuge. That's what I want to do with it.
Who owns it?
The city. The city can't tear it down because it's historical. You say they boarded it up. And I did the research on it, and it used to be a resource center, but they closed it down for whatever reason, and now the house has just been sitting vacant. Mm-hmm. I talked to City Councilman Drew Glover the other day about this issue. He said it sounded like a good idea, and that he was going to check into it, but I haven't heard back from him. I want to open it up as a work resource to give these kids and people a place positive to go and look forward to. I want them to have access to going back to school. I want them to have access to whatever resources they need. Let no man go without. That's what our motto is going to, or any woman, exactly. Let them have what they need to get back on their feet and get to go on and take their place in society that they're supposed to. These kids have nothing but a dark hole that they're living in. And if you have nobody to care enough to lift you up to the sun, lift your face up to the sun, and show you which way to go out, how are they supposed to escape? We've got a boy who killed himself yesterday on the tracks.
Who was that?
I'm not sure who they were. I didn't know his name, but I know that it's across from where I live, and that these kids moved out there after the encampment closed, because I guess they didn't think that they had anywhere else to turn. And that's a crying shame, you know. I lost a friend of mine, he's 40 years old, Mr. Dennis Briggs, because he didn't have a warm place to sleep at night to heal.
How long ago was that?
That was in February. He died 2 days after his birthday. And it just kills me. It's breaking my heart to see, I can't stand to see my friends die on the sidewalk anymore because they don't have a blanket or they don't have a warm place to sleep. This is a big, huge house that's been boarded up. The city owns. It wouldn't cost them anything, just a fraction, to go and pay the utilities on it.
This woman here standing there in front of the house?
No, I have no idea. Mm-hmm. Never seen anybody around it for all these years, 10 years. There's another little house in the back. It's got four. It's a quadruplet apartment. It's got four apartments in it. We can make this into a program that trains people to go and get back into the workforce. We can have certified electricians that teach them how to be an electrician, teach them that skill, how to be a plumber, how to do construction, whatever they want to learn. then it would be at their access to it. So,
were you previously at Ross Camp, by the way?
No, but I was advocating the same thing over there, losing my voice. I even tried to go to City Hall, but I chickened out.
It's okay. They don't listen much anyway, but yeah, Glover tries to, and, you know, I would say if you can, get back to him and try to talk to him. I can mention your name. Do you want to say your name for the broadcast?
I'm Miss L.A. I lost my voice. I'm sorry.
It's okay. And do you have a phone number or email?
I do. It's Linda.
I do, I mean, I'll put it on
4 years.
So it's around 12.
So far, I haven't really followed up on this issue with Miss L.A., but actually, I'm about to call Drew Glover to get the update on the situation with the upcoming city council meeting, which, again, I don't think we have the agenda for. Rather than have Drew repeat himself, because he gave us kind of an update at the Huff and Conscience in Action meetings on, well, yesterday, I'm going to play that portion of the meeting where he talked to us by phone. And he was advised this was being recorded, so we were clearing it with him before we did, and this is what he had to say.
0838.
Thank you, Steve.
Thank you.
So, should we give Drew a call and see what he has to say? So, Drew Glover is a council member who about to give a call to see if he wants to advise us on what may or may not be what he wants to come up on the council agenda. Which is next Tuesday, is that right? Wow, so soon?
It is
next Tuesday. Okay, so we're dialing Drew here. And one thing he does on the agenda, have on the agenda maybe, is criminalization of the homeless, examining ordinances to see which of them particularly.
Hello, this is Drew.
Hey, Drew, it's Robert calling from the Huff Conscience in Action meeting. We are recording this meeting and just got a couple questions for you if you got time.
A couple questions.
Yes. First of all, anything coming up on the agenda you want us to be aware of? I know you haven't got it yet, but as far as you can anticipate.
I have no idea what's coming on the agenda.
Okay, but we assume that since it was indeed voted, was it not, that there be the criminalization issue, at least in part, coming back, correct?
You're correct that there was a vote on that, but then at the end of the evening, Vice Mayor Cummings made a motion to reconsider that vote, and then made a motion, which passed, to reconsider it, and then he made the motion to, instead of agendizing the issues, to only have the reports delivered to city council members no later than June 11th.
Oh, boy.
So it won't be agendized for the next two meetings at least, and then that means that the only opportunity we'll have to have any substantive action and discussion on it is the last meeting in June before the one-month break through July. So at the soonest, we'll hear it the last week or last meeting of June. At the latest, we won't hear it until maybe August.
Has your investigation ended so we can actually hear what's going on with that now?
No.
By investigation, what I meant was Drew has repeatedly said that he can't be as aggressive with challenging the mayor's refusal to put items on the agenda, pressing to have the whole process changed, because he is afraid he has to defend himself against some unknown to us, anonymous, or maybe they're not anonymous, investigation that is going on around him. And I've requested repeatedly what the fuck he's talking about, but he won't say anything because, it was in closed session of city council, to which I reply, no, you're a city council member. If you're being investigated, it's not a closed matter, particularly if you are choosing to talk about it yourself for the benefit of your constituents, to let them know why you cannot or are being forced to pull in your horns on various issues ranging from rent control to behavior of the mayor at city council to behavior of the police against the homeless. The issue that I was asking him about in this phone conversation was a matter which he asked my help for way back in January with his interns to specify which ordinances I thought needed to be examined by the city for their disproportionate negative impact on the homeless, such as the most obvious one, the sleeping ban. Others would be smoking ban in parks, the being in a park after dark, stay away orders, sitting down on the sidewalk. And these ordinances were supposed to be looked into fairly quickly, according to what he requested. But when it came to the vote at the city council, he, perhaps fearing a negative vote from Justin Cummings, perhaps appropriately fearing a negative vote, he had them delayed for 3 months until this May, it was actually until the May 14th meeting, the meeting which was the last city council meeting that we had. At the 14th meeting, it was agreed that the matter would come back on the 28th. At least some of the data would be brought back, and a city attorney admitted that he had actually been derelict in not getting the stuff out on the 14th, as he was supposed to. But apparently at the end of the evening, in a vote that I missed, and I think I played much of it, much of that council meeting, in one of my prior shows, I have to go back and listen to it again, Justin Cummings changed his vote, and so therefore it was postponed, as you hear, the whole issue of which ordinances are disproportionately used against homeless people, and if so, how and why and how frequently, and has there been a change in the last year and so forth, gets postponed at least until the last meeting in June and maybe until August after the city council comes back from its, I guess, July vacation. I assume this year, maybe it's in July. I haven't heard for sure. So that's what they're talking about with respect to the investigation and the ordinance discussion or non-discussion, silence.
We have a question from another person. Go ahead, Julie.
Hi, Drew. This is Julie. I met you at the meeting last Monday.
Hi.
I believe he did want people from either Huff or Food Not Bombs to get together to have a meeting with the Center for Nonviolence to move forward on what our agenda is and how to get there. He had some... Drew, can you clarify what it was your group was looking for?
We said that we are interested in helping to support the nonviolent action campaigns of organizations locally focusing on positive projects. So if the group is planning on developing or enacting a nonviolent action campaign and or wants to plan a nonviolent direct action, then the center, the resource center, is happy to share in that brainstorming and implementation.
Yeah, like strategize and mobilize. Okay.
Will you be having an intern meeting on Friday to chat about the agenda once it comes out tomorrow?
Yes. So, well, actually, let me see if it got to my calendar, because I think I got scheduled for a ride-along at that time with one of the sergeants. So, we could do it on non-violence training all weekend. So we could do it on Monday afternoon or Monday evening.
Memorial Day?
On Memorial Day. I don't get any days off.
Okay.
Well, are people here, anybody interested in going to a meeting with Drew? Well, you intending to do that anyway for your own benefit, or...?
I hadn't talked about it with my team, and it looks like all of my interns actually have that day off, so it may not happen this week. You know, if you have things that you go through the agenda and I identify, you can send me an email with the item numbers in your notes, and then I can take that into consideration if we don't have an official meeting. It's probably easier that way.
Hmm.
I'll go to a meeting if he needs.
Julie volunteers to go to a meeting. Are you? Should we try to schedule something now as a tentative time? Or it sounds like you'd
just give me a call on Sunday.
All right. How do people feel? Is anybody here interested in going to an intern meeting anyway? on Monday, period.
And it's not an intern meeting. It is a...
meeting with you.
Yes, an agenda review, essentially, where we review the agenda.
Agenda review.
I would...
So we have one guy from River Street.
Anything else I can help you with before I leave, because I have to do other things.
Hey, Drew. Real quick, this is Greg Benson. I just moved into... hi there. Just moved in. Susie O'Hara somehow got me on into the River Street campground yesterday.
I can't hear you.
Can you hear me now? Drew? Did you push it as a mute button?
It's doing.
Oh, I can hear you now.
Oh, you can hear me now? Okay, yeah, it's Greg Benson. Susie O'Hara got me into the River Street campground yesterday somehow. I just showed up at City Hall. But I just wanted to give you an update on that. But you had been looking for some people to take part in that, some sort of film project. And it was hectic. I know you were going to start that on the 13th. Is that still going on? Did you still?
Yeah, it was an ongoing project.
Okay, I'll talk to you some other time about that.
Okay, great.
Okay.
Are you anything you want to ask us?
Not at the moment, but if I think of anything, I'll make sure to give you a call or send you an email.
And you haven't gotten access to any of these records that were supposed to be hurriedly and belatedly done by Condotti around infractions?
So,
does that include analysis, or does that just the data?
It includes analysis of the sleeping, urination, and loitering, I believe, and then it has the data for the dogs smoking and all that other kind of stuff.
Okay.
I do have one.
Steve's got a question.
Update. It's not a question, Drew. It's an update. I talked to Patty Brady, who operates the Loads of Love trailer. And he connected me with Ron Powers, who operates their nonprofit. They're going to have the Loads of Love trailer out at 1220 River Street Camp next Wednesday to offer a laundry for the folks out there. So just so you know, they'll be out there next Wednesday night at 6:30.
Oh, great. I love that I get more real-time updates from you than I do from my staff.
All right, brother. Thanks for the work.
Yeah, thank you very much. Have a great day.
I'll give you a call about that Monday meeting. Thank you.
Okay, sounds good.
Hey, thank you, Drew. Anything else? Anybody?
No, have a great day.
All right. Thank you, Matt.
So I'm on the line with Councilmember Drew Glover, also a community activist, who is going to give us a kind of an update further on what you just heard, which is the significance of the postponement of the criminalization data and analysis from what was supposed to be May 14th all the way to end of June and maybe until August. And also maybe, Drew, an update on anything that you've proposed around the very importance of transitional encampments, although transition to what, I got no idea. And other stuff that you've been trying to get action on, bathrooms and so forth. Kind of give us an update, but start with the stuff about what does it mean that the city attorney has delayed this stuff?
Well, it wasn't that the city attorney delayed it, it's that the vice mayor delayed it. Unfortunately, there was a motion made at the end of the evening that was made by the vice mayor and supported by the remaining council members that were still present after the whole public comment debacle, which resulted in a delayed meeting and, in my opinion, a poor decision on the side of the council. But because the vice mayor introduced that motion and it was supported by the remaining council members that were present, it made it so that he made a secondary motion after to reconsider. After that motion was made, he then made the motion to make it so staff would bring back information to us by no later than June 11th. So it's great to have the information coming back and wonderful that we'll be able to look at it. The problem with that and the concern I have with that decision is that it makes it so that at the earliest that we'll be able to talk about the criminalization of the poor or the criminalization of poverty in Santa Cruz will be the second meeting in June. The trick there is that there's already been conversations from both the mayor and the vice mayor talking about all the other things that have been underrepresented on the agenda because of the focus on homelessness. And coming back on the agenda will be the last meeting in June. But if that doesn't happen, then we're not going to hear about it until the first meeting in August, which has been pushed back the ability for the council to critically analyze the situation and the criminalization of poor people in Santa Cruz for at least 2 months if it doesn't get on the final meeting in June. So there's a lot of concern around that for me personally. There's a saying by Dr. King, justice delayed is justice denied.
Oh, yeah.
And it's very much that thought process for me is that every day that goes by where people who are some of the most vulnerable in our community are being subjected to citations on things that may not be regarding to sleeping, quote unquote, because of the city's concern about the Martin versus Boise decision, but taking the form of things like trespassing or other kinds of penalization, which hurts low-income people and potentially their credit.
Particularly since they've been driven out of, many of them, out of the largest encampment that they had, the Ross Camp, without adequate shelter.
That's one facet of a much larger picture of the hardships they've had to deal with being poor in Santa Cruz and experiencing homelessness, but that is definitely one of the reasons.
Why do you think Justin Cummings changed his vote? I was locked out of the council meeting along with other people, and that wasn't very comfortable for me to be able to hang around outside, so I left, by the way, which I think is a pretty clear Brown Act violation, and I hope that that everything that got done at that meeting, and it was only, I guess, wastewater management, maybe the vote by Justin Cummings, the reconsideration vote, needs to be thrown out and redone because we weren't allowed in. You can evict people who are disruptive, and maybe they could claim I was disruptive because I did say shame at one point, for sure, when the mayor refused to allow people to speak at the who aren't still in line. But there were plenty of people in the audience who did not, and they were also excluded. So, I mean, they were excluded from coming back into the chambers, and I think that's a violation of the Brown Act. But why? Why do you think Justin changed his vote? Did you chat with him about it? Did he give any public reasons?
You'd have to ask him. I've had a couple conversations with him about it, but I don't want to speak for him. Mm-hmm. And I think there is the statements have been made both by the mayor and the vice mayor about the concern about the overloaded staff and other things that they want to focus on. So I think that was his primary, from my understanding, his primary reason for reconsidering it was to make sure that there would be room on the agenda for other items that don't have to do with homelessness because of the feeling that it has monopolized the agenda.
Well, it is true that the budget hearings...
an unfortunate position to take, that as it is something that is
for sure
crisis level in our community right now and is impacting thousands of people. To each their own.
Well, it's true that the budget hearings are coming up in June, and those take up, what, full days. But I think it's also true that, was it not, if I remember the May 14th meeting, that the city attorney acknowledged that most of the work had already been done, at least on the more, important issues that Sandy Brown was concerned about.
We're all concerned, or at least I'll share that concern.
Right, that we're all concerned about, but that specifically... that the work had been done, that it didn't need to take up an additional, particularly huge amount of staff time.
Right. And, again, you'll talk to Vice Mayor Cummings about that logic.
And you say I ought to talk to him, or you've talked to him, and he's given you a meaningful and succinct reply.
You'll have to speak with him because I don't want to speak for him or represent his position.
In other words, he spoke to you in confidence? Or?
Yeah, in other words, I spoke with him, but I don't want to speculate or... miscommunicate what he may reach out to him and talk to him. He's an elected official as well.
Yeah, I know. He's a hard man to talk to. He has never responded to any request I made unless I make it in public at a council meeting and one of the breaks. So it's not going to happen. If you don't give me information, I'm not likely to get it directly. I feel like I send him emails. He doesn't respond. So that's why I ask you if you have any idea about that. And I understand.
Like I said, I believe it probably, my assumption is it has to do with the wanting to prioritize other things on the agenda.
What do you think is coming up on the agenda that is going to be important in any way that you've noticed? I know you haven't got the agenda.
I have no idea because I'm not allowed to be in agenda review. There's been no strategic plan for the council, so we have no idea what our direction is with regards to the body as a unit, and I have no idea.
Are you, Brown and Crone, meeting as a group at all to plan any strategies, or is that not happening?
individually, it's...
I mean, as a regular thing.
Also community groups that we meet with. So.
I mean, do you meet as a caucus, I guess is what I'm asking? I got you. Anything that's non-council related that you think is perhaps as important, if not more important, than the city council's peregrinations that we should know about that's coming up that you want to let us be aware of?
The hunger strike in the jail, the death of the Roundtree facility.
Tell me about that.
I don't have time, but you can do your own research. Things to look up. I got to run. I told you I have 5 minutes.
You did.
But I hope that you... have a wonderful afternoon, and thank you for staying on top of local politics.
I'm trying to.
All right, I'll see you later.
Bye-bye. And that was Drew Clever giving us the quickest sign-off he's ever given me, but I did say 5 minutes.
Okey-dokey. Said you're gonna shoot me down, put my body in the river. Shoot me down, put my body in the river while the whole world sings. Sing it like a song. The whole world sings like there's nothing going wrong. He shot her down, he put her body in the river. He covered her up. But I went to get her and I said, my girl, what happened to you now? I said, my girl, we gotta stop it somehow. September like an old sad song. You heard it all before. Well, deal is gone, but I'm settling the score.
Hooray for the Riffraff by The Body Electric, which gets a lot of positive comments on YouTube. It is, according to some of the comments, a meditation on the acceptance of violence and discrimination against people of color, women, and the LGBTQ community. I always prefer more explicit lyrics, but, well... hope you liked it.
Okay, well, it's around 3:15, and I'm getting a phone call from Conscience in Action activist Phil Posner, who has been active in working to assure visitors' rights to the number of areas, but particularly to the River Street campground at 1220 River. And Phil, what's the good word?
Well, so Eric did call me. He said he was going to try to call you, too, but I told him that I would tell you that, yeah, the guy in question, I don't want to say his name publicly. I think you even know him. Will be glad to see me, and I'm a going to go visit him tomorrow.
Now, the issue we had, Phil, was can an ordinary person, once they've contacted someone there, get on a list that indicates that they can walk by and say, I want to see such and such and get into the camp without, you know, an elaborate process of delay. Did we get any sense of that yet?
Yes and no. Their position is that they have to be attentive to the needs of their clients. So in this case, for example, Eric, the director, needed to contact the client, the guy that I wanted to...
Let me interrupt you, Phil, because my question really is this. If the client has put on a list, I want this person to be able to visit me any time of the day or night. And I'm sorry, I'm sounding a little impatient because I've been wrestling with this for quite a while. You seem to be very, very patient with these people in ways that I'm not. And therefore I get impatient with you, probably improperly, because we have different styles, you know. But I want to know whether if someone's on the list, we aren't going to get this long prolegomena about, oh, well, you know, we have our best needs of our clients and our confidentiality. If you're on the list, you get in any time you show up. If the person who is there has said, I want to see this person.
I think the answer is yes, but I didn't. I think the answer is yes.
Okay, so we got to find out if...
You didn't ask me to ask him that specific question.
Well, really, that has been the specific question all along,
well,
really.
The question is, for me, the question is, was I able to go visit someone? And clearly, I am able to visit someone.
Well, no, the issue is not whether you, Phil Posner, a dignified individual in the community, can get in to see that person.
Anybody who wants to visit someone and that person says, sure, I'd like to see Jim, can visit Tom.
Well, that's the question, Phil. And that's the question that you said you didn't ask him and that we don't have the answer to. See, that's the problem. We need that.
You want me to call him again and ask him that?
Yeah, that would be good because I think, and what's needed is that, you know.
Why did you call him?
Well, right now because I'm doing a radio show, but I guess I can. Unfortunately, Eric does not like to be on the air. He's a kind of a private person.
I value your passion about these issues, and I will try to call him and ask him that specific question. In other words, once a person is on a list, mm-hmm. we're not talking about a rabbi, just any citizen mm-hmm. Is on a list, can he visit that person by showing up?
Right, and will the staff facilitate that, or will they say, wait to hear from Captain Harold, we've got to clear it with Eric,
okay.
Come back tomorrow, you know, that's the question.
I know the answer to that question, but I will call him and hope that I can reach him again and call you back.
I appreciate that.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks. And in fact, and I hope I didn't play this on Sunday, perhaps I did, I think Phil did get in touch with him. He also called us back. And I recorded that. It was actually at the Conscience in Action meeting where you heard the brief tape from Drew Glover as well. I'm going to find out if we can actually play that on the air. I don't want Eric, the director of this group, is a rather private person, although he's in a public position, you know, demonstrably, but I'm trying to also, I'm torn here. Let me see if I can actually do this. I tried to reach Eric by phone, but couldn't get him just now, but we did reach him yesterday. He did confirm that if members of the community want to deliver food, they could do so without prior approval to the camp, which is good because that was one of the concerns about the breakup of the Ross camp. But, of course, the problem with the River Street camp is, first of all, there's a much smaller number of people. There are regular, at least, breakfast and dinner meals provided. And there's also no access by the outer community unless you're on a list from someone who's in the campground. And so there can't be the kind of open sharing of food that there was at the Ross camp. So people who want to provide food for even that limited but larger segment of the community that was the Ross camp when people were providing food there can't do it at the River Street camp in the same way. So we talked about the
Conscience in Action meeting, possibly doing it outside the River Street campground, down the road from the River Street campground, on the corner here or there, near the River Street campground. We didn't quite come up with any conclusions at that meeting, but I may actually try to do an update on the things we discussed at the Conscience in Action meeting. And there's often a lot of tumult at the Conscience in Action and Huff meetings, a lot of strong feelings. I try to see that we actually plan to do something. I think there is a plan for a protest at City Council on the 28th. Part of the issue had to do with the barbed wire. We did learn from, I think, Eric Snickars, the director guy I was just mentioning, that he had not gotten any word back from the city manager that they're taking down the barbed wire. And this was the same thing that happened last year when Susie O'Hara assured people at the city council meeting that they were going to be addressing the barbed wire issue, but of course they never did. Barbed wire stayed up. It's stayed up since then. And I think it's unlikely it's going to be taken down. And in a sense, you know, it's more an aesthetic thing than anything else, but it does, they put little kind of peace flags on the barbed wire last year to sort of give it a frilly look. It was kind of an ironic gesture, particularly given the kind of restrictions that were being put on people at that campground and that are still to some extent on the campground now, although it's been liberalized as far as visitors go, at least during the day. But it is true that it was a clear statement by Limbach that there would be 24-hour visiting. I'm going to play that now. May 13th, when we were at the right outside the barbed wire talking with Captain Harold Laubach of the Salvation Army. And you're listening now to Phil Posner presenting his question about visitors.
I think there's one part of this, Harold, that in our phone conversation, I didn't quite understand.
Okay.
And I would appreciate if you would clarify. Salvation Army staff must receive previous client approval for each visit.
Right.
Does that mean, for example, that if I want to see Jim Stein inside, that I have to call you to get approval? And how easy is that going to be, considering the fact that it's not necessarily easy to find Jim Stein?
Okay, so this is under the privacy concern of the clients. We simply deal with this. I just want to make sure that Jim is okay with having a visitor. Right. So the deal is, if you call Jim or talk with Jim downtown or whatever, and he puts you on the list of visitors, we're cool. You come and visit Jim Stein, right? But the deal is, what we don't want is unwelcome visitors or just going around tent to tent, you know, yelling at people, waking them up.
Assuming that that's all that's going to be.
Not even close. No, we have many legitimate visitors every day.
Why are the visits limited to 30 minutes?
One person at a time. All right. One person at a time.
Okay. So as I understand. See?
Oh, okay,
so as I understand your answer is, the camp is willing to have visitors,
right.
but we must call in order to make sure that the resident approves our visit.
Exactly.
Okay.
And anybody could visit as long as the resident approves their visit.
I got a question.
Alicia was next.
How come the visits are limited to 30 minutes? I find that very kind of stringent, and I might not be able to get everything I need done and spoke about in 30 minutes.
Okay, that's a very good question. And here's the deal. We worked out in those guidelines that it can go longer than 30 minutes if we know that it's going to. And this is why. We have really limited space inside. Even the table space is very limited. Right, so if we have, as an example, 16 visitors, that's more table space than we have. So we can go longer than 30 minutes. The guidelines just included that there'd be a request that says, my business is going to take longer than 30 minutes with Jim, so I'm going to need longer. And as long as the staff knows about it ahead of time, we're okay with that. That's okay. So we can be flexible on that as long as there's a reason. What we don't want is just people hanging out all over all day long for no particular reason. Right? So that's the privacy part that we're trying to control. Yes, ma'am. Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah. Robert next, and then
both Alicia's question and Phil's question. First of all, can any member of the staff okay that, or do we have to reach you, the head chief?
You do not have to reach me. Okay. So the member of the staff here is, we have a director and a deputy director. Either one of them can.
And their names are?
Eric and Lauren.
And what are contact information for those two?
I can get it to you. I don't know it off the top of my head, but yes, I can get it to you.
And it will be available to members of the public who want to come in and see their friends.
Of course.
So far, he has not gotten that contact information to me regarding Lauren Dixon, but nor actually Eric, but I did get that information about Eric from another source.
In fact, we probably end up posting it.
Okay, and then secondly, are you clarifying that if you're on a list, you can come and go at any time for a period of 30 minutes without that kind of prior approval, if you've gotten the agreement from the person inside that they want to see you?
That they're okay with you visiting at whatever hour? Yeah, I don't see a reason why not. Okay. Yeah, I mean, we're staffed 24/7. I mean, there's staff here 24/7. There's security here 24/7. So as long as you're on the list of visitation from the client, yeah, we have no limitations on what time of the day you come visit.
Okay.
So there you have it. A pretty clear statement that there are no limitations on the time of day. Yet when 4 days later we showed up, we were told by Director Eric Snickars that there was a limitation. It was from 10 to 3:30. I told Eric, wait a minute, this is not what we were told by the captain. He said, oh, I'll call him up. He called him up, and then he let us know at the meeting yesterday, well, the captain has confirmed it's not going to be 24 hours. So there was a change in the policy, but it was not acknowledged as a change. What disturbs me is the friendly attitude and the kind of open, devil may care, let's be buddies approach of Captain Harold Laubach. Either he had a change of attitude, and if he had, you would think that he would present it differently. It's quite a jump from saying that you can come 24 hours a day anytime you want, provided you're on the list if the visitor says it's okay, which should be the case. I mean, you know, if somebody wants you to be able to come and visit them, provided you're quiet about it and you don't cause other troubles, although, indeed, the tents are pretty close together, and I can acknowledge that, there might be actually some reasons for restricting visitors during times because of other people sleeping, but 10 o'clock to 3:30 is not sleeping time. It's only simply, I guess, staff availability or some such thing. Anyway, another issue I wanted to bring up because it was significant has to do with needle exchange. I've been hoping on this show to get together a program where advocates of even safe injection centers, but at least needle exchange according to the best practices by state authorities, which has to do with one-to-one plus exchange. You don't have to, in other words, have a one-to-one exchange, but you give as much as the people need, not simply one for every one needle based upon the fear that there'll be too many needles or that somehow it's empowering drug addiction by doing that instead of engaging in essentially harm reduction. That there was a statement made by Steve Plaich at the meeting around that, which I think I'm going to play. The issue of needle exchange came up at yesterday's Conscience in Action meeting, actually in the middle of the Huff meeting, too. We merged those meetings together. And I believe Steve Plaich, who has been involved in the Harm Reduction Coalition, had some thoughts about that. And here's some of that discussion.
Exchange support. Can somebody get Steve outside before he goes away?
He's on the phone.
Right, because he's the person who's an expert on the needle exchange. I think Conscience in Action should take a stand, or Huff, if Conscience in Action is gone, on the issue of the harassment of needle exchange that is going up big time in the media and all around town. How do people feel about that?
Oh,
yes, Greg.
I've talked with Denise, and there's actually, she wanted me to get some people with some pull, some doctors, et cetera, to send emails or just basically, she said they could use all the support possible.
Okay, I do want to say that...
That's Denise Ellerick. He is talking about... And that's one of our homeless activists talking, who had been with the Ross Camp and is now with River Street. Denise has been a longtime supporter of expanded needle exchange and other harm reduction matters with the Harm Reduction Coalition.
According to Eric, he is allowing Steve outside before he goes away.
He's on the phone.
Right, because he's the person who's an expert on the needle exchange, kind of Huff action or Conscience in Action around
supporting the right to have needle exchange, its sensibility, not to be restricted to a one-to-one. I mean, I think most of us know the arguments.
Yeah, the public comment period is still open until Friday, so what is best...
On what issue? Remind us what that is.
On needle exchange, on the application to certify a secondary needle exchange in Santa Cruz, which would operate in Harvey West, in Watsonville, and I think one other area. And that would be a supplemental exchange, basically. The county exchange would still be operating, but this would be a secondary mobile exchange.
And what would be the implications of it not being certified?
Well, they would have to go it rogue, you know, until they got chased out like the all-volunteer needle exchange did 5 years ago.
But who could chase it out? Could the city go after it, or would that have to be private vigilantes?
I don't know. You'd have to go back through the history and see how they chased it out of Barson and Bixby and Emmeline several years ago. But basically, the city said, no, you can't do needle exchange at Barson and Bixby because it was in the city. They don't really certify a needle exchange or a syringe exchange program, is what the state calls it. That's entirely up to the state to certify exchange programs. But the city took it upon themselves to prohibit our exchange from working at Barson and Bixby.
Is that still happening? Is that prohibition still in force?
As far as I know, we haven't got that. The Santa Cruz Syringe Access, which is what it was then, doesn't operate anymore. Anyway, that's what I know.
So, what is your sense about the City Council's current ha-ha majority? Are they likely to have a 4 majority to at least block this if somebody attempts to, or more, to overturn it?
Oh, I don't have any idea. I doubt very much that you would find a majority support on council.
And you think you would find 3 members?
I think you'd find 3.
And you might find
the obvious 3.
Right.
Try to convince Justin that it's a good idea. You might have 4.
Do you have any sense of conversations with him?
I've not.
Okay. Before I recognize you, Greg, let me just ask you, Steve, we're talking about some kind of an action in support of this. You say that the discussion closes for the
supplemental. Open comment period closes on
open
Friday.
Comment. And when, after that, how long before they make a decision?
I don't really have any idea.
Okay,
it's a California bureaucracy, so, you know, it could take 30 days, could take 60, could take 90, all of those times.
In that interim, will Needle Exchange continue to do its operating?
As far as I know.
And you work with Needle Exchange?
Yeah, I do.
Okay.
They'll still be out in Harvey West on Sunday nights at 6 o'clock or 7 o'clock.
And is that the only place?
They're in an exchange in Watsonville, too, but I'm not really sure where.
Are you getting any hassle from Take Back Santa Cruz types?
No.
Okay. That was Thursday night?
The corner of Coral and Limehill.
Is that what it is, Coral and Limehill?
Yeah, in Harvey West, unless they're also doing it in Harvey West. But as far as I'm aware, we are only at the corner of Coral and Limehill.
Okay, can you call me if you get any new information on that, Elliot?
I mean, I'm there every weekend.
Right, but if there's also Harvey West, you find it.
Oh, yeah, there is.
And you too, Steve, if you get more information.
Okay.
Appreciate that.
Over there.
I think Greg and then you, Angel. Greg?
I'm not sure what the current status is, but in terms of, is it going to be pushed more towards the needle exchange or a total cancellation? I mean, you know, because I was able to get hundreds, one-for-one exchange with a maximum of 15, or...
The
application is not for one-to-one, it's for one-to-one plus, because that's what best practices are.
Right.
When Denise and the folks collect needles on a Sunday night, or when we used to go to Russ Camp, she would take those to the county, and she could only exchange one for one with the county. So however many needles she collected at Russ Camp, she could get that many needles from the county. You can't go to the county and ask them for needles, they won't give them to you.
Okay.
You have to exchange. That's what exchange means.
Our needle is 50 cents each,
yeah,
by the way.
But functionally, if you are a person going to Denise's needle exchange...
Needles at pharmacies for 50 cents, as some people claim on the internet who are anti-needle people.
Yeah, I do hate getting stuck.
Greg, if that's true, you can buy a needle for 50 cents at a pharmacy. Does anybody know? Anybody know? Nobody knows. Okay, maybe I'll look into it. What the cost is.
Destroyed the market.
Bill, you wanted to say something?
Yeah, I don't know if this is relevant or not, but I just know that somewhere there's been a group that's been going to Belton that's been trying to do like a needle exchange program type thing up there. Mm-hmm. And there's a group that's in opposition to that, already, that Congress has been bringing back
I think I've heard of both those groups, and I think one of them is Steve's group. Steve, your group has been visiting Felton as well, right?
Present?
Needle Exchange Group has been visiting Felton, or one, Denise has been involved in that.
I don't know whether Denise has gone to Felton or not, not to my knowledge.
Because there's some controversy up in Felton. An opposition group, as Angel has pointed out, forming, is mentioned in a Felton newspaper.
Oh, I'm sure there's opposition groups.
Okay.
Yeah, they call themselves Bring Back Felton.
Santa Cruz, the Scotts Valley City Council just voted unanimously.
Yeah. Right.
Against Needle Exchange. So.
Now, does that mean,
it's a secondary exchange.
Does that mean that there's actually going to be prosecution people up there?
Don't know how that plays out.
Yeah, but as far as you know, people who are doing your kind of work aren't going up there specifically.
As far as I know, I don't know anybody who is. I don't know everybody that's
I understand.
Doing it.
Okay. So is there anything, I just wanted to bring that up. Do you want any support in this regard, Steve? Do you think the group wants any support from groups like us?
You have to ask Denise, really. She's the one that's really, she submitted the application, she's been doing all the work, she's the spokesperson for it, so I don't want to speak for her.
And we're talking about Denise Elrick, who's the, who's trying to get a, past the local certification stuff that is heavily influenced by anti-needle people like Chief Mills, Sheriff Hart, Take Back Santa Cruz, and so forth. Well, for that matter, Captain Harold Laubach of the Salvation Army, who does not allow needle exchange inside the River Street campground or any of his other Salvation Army places.
Do you have her phone number?
For Denise?
Uh-huh.
I do, and I have to figure out where...
But I think we're going to leave it there. I was also thinking to try to get together a debate between the folks who favor an expanded needle exchange and those who want to cut it back. And so far, I haven't yet reached out to essentially the Take Back Santa Cruz folks, because I thought I would meet them at the Tuesday West Side Neighbors meeting that won't be happening until next Tuesday at the police department at 5 o'clock on the 28th of May for those who want to go and check out the West Side Neighbors attack on RV livers or RV inhabitants, residents.
Say his name, 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 what
And that was a song by a bunch of singers that got together: Janelle Monáe, Deep Cotton, Saint Beauty, Jadena, Roman, Gian Arthur, George 2.0, Hell You Talk About, or Are You Talking About? And of course, it names people killed, black folks killed by the police in the last 5 or 6 years, maybe a little longer. Walter Scott, Jermaine Reed, Philip White, Eric Garner, Trayvon Martin, Sean Bell, Freddie Gray, Eliana Jones, Sandra Bland, Kamani Gray, John Crawford, Michael Browns, Miriam Carey, Sharonda Singleton, Emmett Till, that's an old name, Tommy Yancey, Jordan Baker, and Amadou Diallo from 1999. Shot 42 times in New York by the NYPD. YouTube video is much more graphic, has a lot more video impact, and shows you a lot more, as well as blasting the names across the screen so you can see the spelling of the name and the police doing the shooting. Now it's off to the Red Church, where we're going to check out some of the voices of the folks in line. Started out kind of limited in the number of folks who were there, and the number grew until the line went all the way back to the second door, which is three-quarters of the way around the room.
So we're talking with
Thomas.
And Thomas, what you got?
Well, yesterday, Sunday, I didn't get enough sleep the night before, so I was heading over to Loudoun Nelson Park to take a nap. And it was about noon because it had been raining all morning, and I was kind of staying under awnings on Pacific. But it started clearing up around noon, and I went over to Loudoun Nelson. And I discovered that they were having some kind of little mini carnival for the kids, and they were setting up a band stage and everything. So I thought, okay, I'll go to Depot Park instead. But I was so tired that when I walked back around to the front on Central Street, you know, those two little benches that are out front, I stopped to sit for a minute. And no sooner did I stop than here comes the blue shirt rent-a-cop guy. And, excuse me, sir, you're going to have to move on. And I go, why? And he goes, well, somebody back there is saying that there's a homeless guy out here, and I just got really pissed off, and so so I said, well, what is their problem? I mean, why don't they have the balls to come out here and talk to me themselves, you know, and find out that I'm actually a real person who doesn't even smoke tobacco anymore, let alone crack or anything else, and I'm not out here leering at their children or anything else. I'm just tired. I'm sitting down on a bench for a minute on my way to Depot Park. I didn't say exactly all this, but
that's where you felt.
Basically, this is the gist of it. And he was giving me plenty of room to vent, and all along saying, I understand, you know, I have to do this all the time. He was actually on my side, and he was a young guy, Mexican man, and I thought, okay, this guy, he's just trying to pay his bills. And he was really cool, and he let me vent, and when I was done, I just said, thank you, have a good day, and I went on.
And where was this bench?
Right in front of the doors, the front doors at Loudoun Nelson. Right there on
it's
Central.
The community center, you have a right to sit there.
Yeah, I know. That's what I told him. And when he said, you're going to have to move, I said, no, I'm going to just sit here.
Did you stay?
I sat there for a minute, and I kept, you know, going on about it. And I was waiting for him to say, well, I'm going to have to call the cops, but he never said that.
Did he move on, or did he stay there?
No, he stayed and let me talk, and he was actually, you know, really, I was pleasantly surprised. He was a really...
He didn't leave you alone afterward. He stayed until you left.
Yeah, he did, actually. I did get up and start leaving right about the same time that he started walking away.
Sort of. Because you felt like leaving, or because you felt you were pressed
to
leave?
I was getting ready to leave in the first place before he even got there.
So you actually accomplished your purpose.
Yeah. I actually took extra time away from my would-be getting ready to take a nap time to try to educate this young man. So
and you weren't even paid to do it.
No, I wasn't even paid to do it.
And we've been talking with?
Thomas.
Who else? Thank you, Thomas.
Thank you.
Talking with?
Ricardo Lopez.
You have another report about our friends, the Rangers?
Yeah, they're just, they're really into, like, harassment mode. They're really harassing people, and I'm beating the bushes, you know, for people. And I I just really wonder where they're getting all this extra money and priority to go around. I always tell them, you have such an important job, you know, chasing me and one homeless girl out of you know, someplace far away, up deep in the bushes, and they can't.
What was your last contact with them?
Yesterday, as they ran down to try and get me to go back and get some stuff that was wet out. And they said, he was going to carry it out. And I said, oh, that's what your threat is? You're going to steal my stuff? He says, well, if it's wet, I'll have to throw it away. And I wanted to say, why don't you just say if it's worth less than $100, it's considered trash, you know?
What was the stuff he was talking about?
Sleeping stuff that I would have, it wasn't that wet. I would sleep in it, you know? Plus, a bunch of sleeping bags, you can, if they're good ones, you can sleep in them when they're wet, and you'll just dry them out.
And did he end up taking the stuff?
No, he just talked a good game, but he didn't really want to put the backbone into it. Of course, they have to climb over they're log jams that we have. If you're light enough, you can walk over them. But they broke right through the first time the man rangers came over. The women rangers can walk over them. They're light enough, yeah. And they're like stairs, you know. You can just walk on them. But if you're too heavy, you'll fall through. And the boy rangers have to navigate it, you know. So he wasn't going to go out there in the rain and get the stuff, and yet he's telling me to go do it, you know. It's ridiculous. Yeah.
Have you heard any other encounters with these folks?
Oh, everybody's been having, one of my friends, they really harassed her. They gave her a ticket and then came back just quickly right after that, gave her another ticket for and set her a court date for a misdemeanor. And, you know, those stay-away orders. And plus, it's an island in the middle of the river. Isn't that federal territory?
I don't know.
You know? I don't think they really have jurisdiction there, you know?
Yeah. Find out more, let me know.
I will. I'd be glad to.
And of course, we're talking with
Ricardo Lopez.
Thank you, Ricardo.
Thank you.
People almost freezing to death last night of hypothermia. This is fascist crimes against humanity by the police department in City Hall. Everybody can see that with their ass cold. I see it every day. They throw you out of jail without a blanket, or they beat you down and take you into jail. And that's what I'm looking at. It's crimes against the United States of America, you know, civil rights, human rights, constitutional rights. Everybody can see that. When I swore to protect the flag as a citizen of the United States, that means that's my duty to do so.
And we've been listening to the thoughts of
Tony Mendoza.
Who else?
Who's been arrested falsely and falsely in prison with police brutality.
Any hassles recently?
No, they've been ignoring me for some reason.
Is that good?
I haven't filed a lawsuit against them for, breaking my arm and all that stuff. You know, the taxpayers, they bring us everything we need. You know, they take away our blankets, our sleeping bags, and the community being back to us, you know, especially the Rangers. You know that. Everybody can see that.
I keep getting told.
Yeah, you know, you can see it. I see it every day. But not as much as before because they got their backs up against the wall. What I'd like to see is a rope around their neck like we did to the fascists in Germany. They did it to Mussolini, Portugal did to the communists.
Thank you,
overnight.
Tony. Take care, man.
When a council member says, don't work against us, work with us, there's something wrong. That council member is missing something very important. During the years that the city raided the encampments of the homeless, continuously confiscating their possessions, which left them exposed to the elements, it was the homeless who were saying, hey, work with us, not against us. We're human beings, not aliens. We're part of your society. The city's response was to hold another raid a few weeks later. It never seemed to get enough of its ability to add torment to those who had already been in most dire circumstances. The only thing that stopped the raids was compensation of goods with the Federal Circuit Court of Appeals. I'm going to skip here. The city just doesn't seem to know how to stop tormenting people. Yet the city council wants self-respecting human beings who still have real human feelings in their hearts to work with them. First, the city must show that it can actually stop working against the people. This is an open letter that I just picked up on Facebook from a guy named Steve Martinot, Martinot, dated today, on working with and working against. Open letter to the mayor and city council on Facebook.
Which Facebook page?
Marcia Poole posted it. But he does go on and nails them in a similar manner about every corrupt thing that they've been doing in the name of do it our way without ever listening to what their citizens want. And it's worth reading.
And we've been listening to the oratory of...
Just another domestic terrorist, that's all.
And domestic terrorist number 10. Thank you, sir. That again.
Only thing that's sad to me is that people don't have a dry place to stay, like an awning or something they can stay underneath and not get hassled. It's really sad to see that. I'm lucky I have a car, but a lot of people out there are struggling.
And your name is?
Gregory.
And Gregory, have you been hassled in your car?
No.
Good. How long you been in town?
3 years.
Hey, good work.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks, Gregory. Any reports?
Or the police probably saying I didn't see any incidences.
That's good.
They had control of most situations.
And you want to say your first name?
My first name is Eric with a C.
Thank you, Eric.
Oh, Rocky.
Thanks. Thank you for the dinner.
Yeah, I didn't do it. I'm just
all right.
I'm just wandering around.
Yeah. Not really.
Jax? Sucks.
Oh, Jack.
They've been discriminating.
Tell me about that.
And telling us that we can order their food, but we can't eat inside. And when we asked them to explain themselves, they said it was policy. And then they eventually asked us not to come back. We're not allowed on their property anymore.
When did this happen?
On Sunday.
And it took them forever to tell us why we couldn't be in there. We kept asking, like, why, and he said, well, let me make this, or so. He kept putting it off.
He stated over and over again, it's policy. It's our policy. If you stay, we can call the cops. So I kept asking. Finally, they started making excuses. Well, the smell. Not a specific smell, but the smell.
I don't smell nothing.
I took a shower yesterday. What are you talking about, the smell? Mm-hmm. So then they said, well, it's alcohol. Like, they didn't see any containers or anything. They're all of a sudden saying...
You were intoxicated, were you?
No, they said, it's not you. Mm-hmm. It's some other people in your group. So all of you are not allowed to sit in here.
Well, we're just being cautious, you see.
I said we're spending our money just like any other customer, and those customers get to stay.
They waited to take the money before they said this to us.
So wait a minute. So you were a customer, and then they tried to
we were paying customers.
$40.
And that happened to you, too?
Yeah.
So want to give your name for free radio?
Eileen.
David.
And if you got contact information, if you give it to me, I'll get back to you. Because we had this problem with Jax 10 years ago. We did a protest out front. They changed their policy.
Okay.
Now, apparently, they're fucking up again.
Also, Tish, she made a video on her phone, so she should have interviews from us as well.
Your name again is?
Eileen.
And?
David.
Thank you both. I'm sorry this shit happened to you.
Life has been great. I'm here to continue.
I see you have a musical instrument on your back.
Yeah.
Have you been playing outside?
Oh, yeah, every day.
And are you getting a good income?
It's never easy.
And are you being hassled by any police? No, rangers?
Police have been cool, and the rangers have been just as cool. Lot less problems lately. It's been nice.
How long have you been doing this?
Probably almost my whole life.
And in Santa Cruz?
All over the world.
How recently in Santa Cruz?
Last 15 years.
And we've been talking with?
Jeff.
Thanks, Jeff.
Thank you. You say, you know, everybody that's on SSI, SSD, okay, how come they made it so hard for them to deal with a lost card? How come they make it so hard for somebody, you know, that's in that position to make a phone call? Well, we got at least two land services in this town that don't belong. One's right next to the laundromat on Mission Street, where the old, where there was another, there's a closed store or closed place we used to eat, and it's right there in front, and it shows just right, like plain as day, but nobody ever notices. Thank you.
And we've been talking with
Gregory.
Thanks, Gregory. Anything you want to say yourself?
I didn't go last Wednesday because it was raining. What happened last Wednesday? It's kind of been chaotic the last couple weeks.
It was pretty chaotic. Kevin really got a lot of reports. Grab me later when I'm not doing this. Kim, any?
And I apologize for some of the fragmentary quality of some of these reports, but people are in line, they're about to get food, they have to sign in for food. People behind them are impatient to get to the food while it lasts, because it doesn't last. It gets all eaten up. And so we get fragments at times. So there you are.
Your reports?
Your radio show has...
Oh, I was thinking about starting Food Not Bombs in Asheville, North Carolina, but I don't have any money.
I hear you, babe. Any reports from the street? Thank you. Any street reports? Any reports from the street?
2020.
Say again.
The rain was fabulous. Cleaned the air all up.
It's but did really you get wet?
Yes, absolutely.
Did you get soaked?
Yeah, I had to steam dry.
Indeed.
Inside the bag, steam coming out.
And how long did that take?
Oh, God. It was about three quarters done by the morning.
Yeah, that sounds... I would hate to be in your shoes.
No, top of the leg. Just remember to get inside the bag. Or you fall asleep looking at the stars. Get in the bag.
You could see the stars.
Well, so to speak. Yeah, looking out.
You, I don't think there'd be heavy clouds.
It was heavy raindrops. It was... It was like a good, nice day in Eureka. Heavy rain.
And we've been talking with?
Waxwood.
Your name is?
Michael.
Thank you, Michael. Anything you want to add?
Well, get some boards and suit. We're going to be at Cal's. We're going to start surfing. Set up a little surf corner there. So drop in if you want to try it. We'll try it. In the next few days, we'll see us.
Thank you, sir.
Soft talk words. All right.
Thank you, Michael. Yeah.
The police need to back off a little bit.
And what's happened to you?
Keep parking tickets and harassment of just being on the street.
And when was the last time you got such a ticket?
3 days ago. Or yesterday. Yeah, panhandling. Then he bought $5 in gas. Figure that one out.
Wow. Where did you get the ticket?
By the 76 station, Midtown.
And what police agency gave it to you? Do you remember?
Santa Cruz Police.
What did they say to you?
He said, I was on the sidewalk. He said, I'm not allowed to be panhandling. And he gave me a ticket for it.
It is legal to ask for money. There are limitations, supposedly, severe restrictions, but you shouldn't be, there's no blanket ban on panhandling. So, go ahead. So we've been talking with?
Rob.
Thank you, man.
Yes.
Got you. Anything you want to say for free radio?
No, I'm just too tired tonight.
Okay, man. Get some rest. And I've already talked to you.
Yes, sir.
Any reports for free radio?
And we'll be returning to the Red Church probably on Sunday, at least to this bunch of Red Church interviews. But here's an interview with a poet up in Felton that I ran into at the White Raven Cafe, who has written a poem or two that I wanted him to read, and so he did.
It's close to 2 o'clock, and I'm here in the... White Raven Cafe on May 19th, and I'm talking with
Ron Lampe.
And Ron, you went to your car and pulled out this original draft, or it looks like a corrected draft, of a poem you wrote inspired by the Ross Camp?
Yes, that's correct, yes. When I saw it for the first time from the intersection of Highway 1 and River Street, I was... taken aback. I mean, I had all these impressions come to me, and so I wrote this short poem simply titled Tents.
Get it.
Tents. Night. It's chilly. Light rainy. It's miserable to be outside. Who'd want to be outside in a night like this? What is that? What is going on there? You're driving by Highway 1 at River Street and squeeze behind the Gateway Plaza alongside the highway up against the San Lorenzo Levee. What was that? What mirage was that? Tents? There must have been 100 of them. Tents, small, in rows, shiny wet. You could make out a few colors in the dark. Tents? In this weather? And all this winter season? How is it possible to live like that? A whole tent encampment is out there in the night, in this inhospitable night, in the cold, in the rain. Who are these people who can settle into such a night? The homeless, the Santa Cruz homeless. It's the homeless encampment, the so-called tent city. And Santa Cruz wants to do something about it. Like what? Where can these people go? What is happening here, Santa Cruz? And not only in Santa Cruz, what is happening here? America. America, how can this be? You are America the wealthy. America the bountiful. America the great. America the moral leader. America, protector of its citizens. Yes. No.
And again, the name of the poem, Ron?
Is simply Tense.
And we're listening to the poetry of?
Ron Lampe.
Thank you, Ron.
You're welcome, Robert.
So we got a long Food Not Bombs poem, so just grab your coffee.
This is a long poem.
Well, start at the beginning. I'll see how tired I get.
See, I know what the stop sign was. I know that.
Food Not Bombs.
Yeah.
Why are all these people gathered there? Well, they're hungry. Hanging from the trunk of a sycamore tree, a sign you will see, Food, Not Bombs. And it's every Saturday and Sunday, 4 to 6 p.m., you'll see them lined up and gathered there. Food, Not Bombs sets up at the corner, Water and Front Streets, alongside the downtown Santa Cruz post office, and offers freely and compassionately, no one turned away, deliciously and genuinely healthy food to the homeless and hungry, feeding those in need, and doing so at the same location ever since the Occupy movement of 2011. And line up they do, down the sidewalk, going even beyond the iron pointy fence that is now a permanent imposing painted fence the city felt it had to put up to protect the PO at over 100 years old, is listed in the National Register of Historic Places, as up to 300 people can show up for a meal over the 2 days. They patiently wait in line, holding big, compostable, hard paper bowls, queuing up to long white folding tables under a big white portable canopy, these silver hotel trays packed with food, 8 servers scooping out great tasting vegan dishes. After all, it's all cooked at India Joe's. It has to be good. And I can attest, I indulged a bit myself. There's variety, there's bean chowder, fresh produce, baked goodies, breads cut up, and a water dispenser. They all load up and chow down sitting along the fence or on the lower PO steps or wherever there's enough of a ledge to sit and eat. And a few of the inner circle of friends sit on folding chairs around the literature table. Friendly Keith McHenry, point man for this local chapter of Food Not Bombs, among them. Bicycles, shopping carts, skateboards, day packs, big black bags of personal life belongings that have been wheeled around are parked along the fence all around the area. A guitar or two is strummed by someone or another. A joint or two is lit up. Small conversations, but more so silent, private, focusing on eating. A woman paces around, oblivious to others, talking to strips of paper she constantly throwing down on the pavement. And a few latecomers are still showing up. I came with a camera and realized the sensitivity of the scene. But street photography I had already been doing a while, and so I was aware. And I met Keith McHenry when I first arrived. He happens to be an original co-founder with 7 other anti-nuclear activists of Food Not Bombs back in Boston in 1980 when he was a Boston University student. He saw so much good organic produce from the health food store he worked at tossed out and wasted. What a terrible shame that was. So he thought of sharing it with those going without, starting at the local public housing project. Why not? And it so happened across the street from it, believe it or not, had gone up a new weapons lab in the U.S. Intercontinental Nuclear Bomb Program, which made him so immediately aware of the menace of nuclear weapons and nuclear power. And he and his activist friends said something like, Why not offer food rather than bombs? So Food Not Bombs was born, and so they distributed food to various housing projects and then offered food, even cooked meals, directly on the street. Keith himself had gone through a homeless period in the 70s, so he had firsthand experience of what it was like. And at some point in the 80s, he migrated to San Francisco and helped start up another Food Not Bombs group. The homeless situation was in SF was well known and definitely escalating. And for the good work of feeding the homeless there, but without a permit, they started getting arrested. The first arrest, including McHenry, occurred at Golden Gate Park, August 15th, 1988. And over the years, as Food Not Bombs chapters popped up across the country, their volunteers have been arrested for the simple act of feeding the hungry thousands of times. In Santa Cruz, a chapter was founded in 1992 by Kim Argula, Robert Flory, and Tony Mello. And Keith McHenry came down to the cruise and is today spokesperson for our local Food Not Bombs. Something like 38 years he's been dedicated to feeding the homeless and hungry. Locally, he's been butting heads with the city and a few residents who take issue with feeding the homeless in this way, as they say, eyesore messy, open public way. But as Keith says, we can end homelessness if we divert some of the billions spent for war on real national security of jobs, affordable housing, education, and health care. Blaming the homeless for their condition is clearly not working. Food Not Bombs is now active in 1,000 cities in 65 countries. And every Saturday and Sunday, 4 to 6 p.m., they come for the nourishment of good food, good food served up with compassion.
And the name of the poem again?
Food Not Bombs.
And indeed, tomorrow, Friday the 24th, as I think I mentioned earlier, Food Not Bombs has its 39th anniversary soup stock that the Resource Center for Nonviolence, and it's a $5 to $20 sliding scale, or come on in if you ain't got anything and just be there. That's going to start at 6. It's, again, 612 Ocean Street. I think I said 610 before, my mistake. And as I mentioned before, DNA, Gina Wren, Danny Paul Nelson, Robert Perala, Raging Grannies, and Lyrical Eye will be there. Food Not Bombs will be celebrating. I'm reading from the Indie Bay pronouncement. 39 years of feeding social movements and the hungry at the Soupstock Festival. The 20th anniversary Soupstock featured Fugazi and Slater Kinney and it drew nearly 20,000 people. With nearly a billion people going hungry every day, how can we spend another dollar on war? Food Not Bombs is an all-volunteer movement, again reads the Indie Bay announcement, that recovers and shares free vegan or vegetarian food with the public without restriction in over 1,000 cities in 65 countries around the world to protest war, poverty, and the destruction of the environment. Each group is independent, invites everyone to participate in making decisions for their chapter using the consensus process. You know, I'm going to skip the advertisements. You can go online and read it. You can talk to Keith and other activists who are doing it about it by either going to Soupstock tomorrow at 5 or going to the meal 4 to 6 Saturday and Sunday over the weekend, or showing up to help serve free food at the Front Street Kitchen where they prepare it, 18 Front or thereabouts. It's at India Joe's Restaurant. So if you want to help out in any of those ways or volunteer to either serve or cook or distribute literature or help organize or back homeless civil rights, and that's what we do at HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, you can come to those events for the Food Not Bombs connection, or you can get in touch with us at 423-HUFF, 423-4833. It's also meeting time for us noon every Wednesday, and 11 o'clock the hour before, it's Conscience in Action, which is a similarly involved group, mostly many of the same people and much of the same objectives, all at the Sub Rosa Cafe next to the bike church at 703 Pacific. And that's about it for this edition of Bathrob Spears Broadsides. I want to thank you for being with me, and hopefully you'll actually go out there and do something yourselves, which may involve stopping and observing police officers harassing a homeless person, or maybe you don't know if they're harassing, maybe they're just talking to someone. But if you show up, get close enough to hear, pull out your camera or your phone, take a few pictures, it's not going to hurt anybody that you do that, and it may help. And if you find something that's worth passing on, post it on YouTube and give me a call at 423-4833. Huff is looking for volunteers. If you're interested, 423-4833, again, is the number to call if you want to be a part of Huff. And also Free Radio is looking for all kinds of stuff, people, equipment, funding, and also a place to set up a studio, 10x10 space with access to electricity, internet, bathroom. We pay you $300 as a finder's fee if you find it. And we also give you a hearty hug for doing that, because we need a place. And you can call me and let me know any tips, or you can go to the Free Radio website at freakradio.org. That's it for this edition. Talk to you again, well, when you listen.